Bingeworthy and all the playlist podcasts are sponsored by Mubi, a curated online cinema streaming a selection of exceptional, independent, classic, and award-winning films from around the globe. Mubi's film experts handpick every single film they show. Each day, they present a new gem, and you have 1 month to watch it. Current highlights now showing include Portuguese coming-of-age tale John Frum, as well as a global retrospective on Philippe Garrel, featuring exclusives like Les Hautes Solitudes and The Birth of Love. Mubi is available on the web, on the Roku platform, PlayStation, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, and Samsung Smart TVs, as well as on mobile devices including iPad, iPhone, and Android. The playlist listeners are eligible for a special 30-day free trial. Regular people can only receive 7 days free. Visit mubi.com/theplaylist to start watching.
You are listening to Bingeworthy, the episodic television and long-form narrative conversation of the Playlist Podcast Network and theplaylist.net. Here's your host, Kimber Myers.
Hello and welcome to Bingeworthy, the Playlist official TV podcast. I'm your host, Kimber Myers, and with me today I have our fearless leader, editor-in-chief Rodrigo Perez, and today we're going to talk about the new Netflix series, Master of None, from Aziz Ansari and Alan Yang, and it's returning for its second season.
Have you watched Master of None, I'm assuming?
You've caught up. Yeah, I really wanted to parcel it out because it's so good that even just waiting like a week and a half to get through the whole thing was pretty painful, but no, I've watched it.
Are you binging it, or are you?
No. One at a time.
Okay.
Yeah. Snacks.
Snacks.
Did you binge it then?
I mostly binged it. I think
like
I watched it.
Like a normal human being.
I think it took me like two or three nights.
Okay.
But I would, you know, do like three or four episodes at a time.
Cool.
I gotta say, season two is like really good.
Yeah.
But I wasn't much of a fan of season one.
No, I prefer season two, which, so to kind of backtrack a little bit for anybody who's like, what is this Master of None thing? Why are people talking about this? So Master of None is a Netflix original that just released its second season. It was created by Aziz Ansari and Alan Yang, who won an Emmy for it in its first season. And it's about a young, around 30-something actor in New York City named Dev Shah, who is also played by Ansari, and his exploits in life and love and all of that.
Kind of loosely based on Ansari.
Yes, yeah, loosely based on Ansari, and there is an Alan Yang counterpart as well in Kelvin Yu, who plays Dev's friend Brian. And so there are definitely some real life counterparts and correlations to what's actually happening. And
which one is the best friend? Is it Eric Moore?
Oh, so there's also, in addition to Brian, who's played by Kelvin Yu, the mm-hmm. other best friend who's been more prominent, which I'm not complaining about,
right.
Arnold. Right. And that's Eric Graham.
Right, okay. He's amazing. Like, steals a lot of it.
Yeah, he's great. They're great together. Season one focused on Dev's relationship with Rachel. And not to spoil season one, but I think it's fair at this point. Dev and Rachel broke up. And season two finds him at the beginning in Italy making pasta.
Trying to recover from
breakup. Yes, yeah. Recovering from the breakup, really indulging in food and his love of food, and not being in New York where he had this great romance.
Right,
with.
Sort of like, I've been broken up with, this is really bad, I need some headspace, and like, takes off to Italy because he can, and because he's an actor, and presumably he's got some decent amount of money.
Yeah, from that Go-Gurt commercial.
Yeah, the Go-Gurt commercial. And I guess, you know, I was saying I didn't really love season one, which still stands, but there's some interesting things going on, at, like in directing wise and things like that. James Ponsoldt directed a few episodes. And we should note that Aziz Ansari himself directs a bunch of episodes. Eric Wareham directs episodes. And Harris Whittles, you know that guy? He died of a heroin overdose.
Yes.
He's that comedian writer who wrote a lot for Parks and Recs.
Yeah.
And he was a really good friend of Aziz Ansari. He was one of his best friends. And he wrote the story for The Hot Ticket. He didn't write the episode, obviously, but the story is by him and it's credited to him. So that's kind of interesting.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Don't forget Lynn Shelton also
yes,
directed
that's right.
a couple.
Yes, she directed two, and I love Lynn, and she's great. But to me, you know, it even starts with that first episode. It's called The Thief, but it's basically based on The Bicycle Thief by Asika.
Yes. Asika. Yeah. Taking us back to film studies
that's
101.
Right. That's right. And he's an apprentice pasta maker in Modena, Italy. And that whole episode's in black and white. It's shot like obviously like Italian foreign film. The music in it is fantastic. It's all
beautiful.
Like, you know, just old school Italian. I think there's some Nina Rota in there. And I guess my point was, I think it's a major step up from season one.
Agreed. I thought season one was so incredibly assured for first-time showrunners. And obviously, Aziz has been forming his voice for a while as a comedian, and Alan Yang has worked on shows previously as well. But for two first-time showrunners, I was incredibly impressed and was wondering if it was going to be one great season and then just nothing because they burned it all out. But no, I agree. I think artistically, thematically, everything. Season two is such a step up and feels so special.
It, to me, it's a step up, but also I wasn't very convinced in season one. Like, I didn't think he was a very good actor.
Yeah.
The show has sort of like, even still in season two to some degree, it has this sort of shocking propensity of like really putting non-actors and people who can't act to the fore. So that is a little clunky, and I just feel like, you know how like sometimes, especially with old school network television, when you're watching things, a show took a minute to find its groove. Mm-hmm. I think that's less the case with peak TV lately.
Yeah.
Like something's just great. But, you know, I think back in the day a little bit, you'd be like all of a sudden, you know, you'd hear season two, season three, that the show's really good. But it took a minute to find its sea legs.
Yeah.
It's almost never the case in peak TV. It's either, I mean, it might be part of our culture too, because it's just so like, this sucks or this is amazing.
Yeah.
Like there's usually no in between, but I think the show took a minute to find its legs. That's how I felt about it. I wasn't really into season one, and I was sort of getting a little bit bored with it, and then people were like, you have to see season two, you have to see season two. It took me a minute, and then I started really, really getting into it, and it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I love it. Visually, I think is incredibly strong in the fact that there is actually a visual style to it, which for a comedy, while not as rare as it would have been a few years ago when you have other shows like Dear White People also on Netflix, which has a really strong visual sense. But
and rules.
Oh God, so great. We need to do another podcast.
Yeah,
about that.
Dear White People is amazing.
But yeah, I am impressed by how it looks visually, that there's so much attention to detail paid there, which generally most comedies, even in peak TV, are focused more on the jokes or the character and less on what we see.
I hadn't even really thought about that, but you're right. It is really well shot.
Yeah.
It looks really good, too, like, you know, just quality-wise.
Yeah.
Let's talk our favorite episodes, because there's at least two that are, like, really fantastic.
Yes. So, what is your favorite?
Well, I would say it's like New York, I Love You, and The First Date. And to explain a little bit, The First Date is essentially an episode about Tinder, essentially. It's directed by Eric Wareheim, who plays the Arnold character, who's hysterical. When I first started watching season two, or even season one, I was like, he's funnier than Aziz. Like,
he's really great.
He's really brilliant. And so it's directed by him, and it's essentially like Dev goes on a bunch of dates with different women. And the way it's cut and told is amazing, because he's like, you know, on a date and he's having this conversation, and then it cuts, and or the camera will move, and then he's having a conversation with another girl. So it's like he's been on like 30 dates, and the show like intercuts all those dates together. And you think it's going to be like, oh, just one date, another. But it cuts back to each date, and it's like maybe there's about 10 of them, and they're interweaved, cutting back and forth. It's pretty brilliant.
It is so well executed, well edited, super entertaining, and I felt also quite true to life. And I mean, not that I've slept with anyone with a racist statue on their bedside, but no, it was a great episode, incredibly entertaining, and just fit with what we love about the show and about his voice and about dating in New York. Not that either of us has experienced that a long time.
Yeah, that's true. But... I mean, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
I'm married, so she's long-term relationship. So it's been a while, and I'm actually even like I never done Tinder because it was pre. You
yeah.
know. But I think everyone still can appreciate that concept,
totally.
Right?
Totally. You've been on dates. You have the restaurant that you bring your first date to, and
we're also all like social media literate. So mm-hmm. even if you haven't been on Tinder, although I've been on Tinder on my friend's phone, and, like, swipe through people. I'm like,
right?
No. You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of fun to do. But yeah, we're so social media literate that you don't necessarily need to have done it to be able to understand it. Like,
absolutely.
We all understand instant gratification. We all understand, you know, messaging someone and then hearing back. We know the idea of texting someone and waiting, seeing the little bubbles when someone's responding.
Yeah.
It's not that different. You can understand. So there's a brilliance in that episode about the anxiety of dating,
yes.
the pleasures of dating, the pains of dating, the frustrations of it, things that all apply to everyone, whether you've been on Tinder or not.
It's universal.
Yeah,
in terms of the timing in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. Because everyone understands whether it's dating, relationships, and that's still part of it. And, you know, there's some great girls, there's some terrible girls. he goes on good dates, he goes on bad dates.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily the best, you know, dater in the whole world either. So I like your point about, like, it literally is maybe one of the best edited episodes of TV comedy I think I've ever seen. It's just so well put together.
Yeah.
The writing is phenomenal. I'd be really curious to see how much of that was in the editing room and how much of it was the writing.
Yeah.
Like, if it's written like non-linearly like that, I'm sure some of it is, but you never know in the editing room that they could, you know, even cut it up more, but it's a brilliant episode.
Yeah, and I was also really excited to see Lauren Miller. I think is her name. She was one of the more successful dates.
Okay.
The one that he does go home with.
Oh,
no.
That he goes home with and sleeps with.
Yes.
And she's got the racist.
Yes. But she, I really like.
Yeah, she's good.
And liked previously in For a Good Time Call, which I felt like was an underrated sexy comedy.
Oh, really?
No, yeah. Sure. But she's Seth Rogen's wife. So she'll sometimes pop in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But she is wonderful and deserves more great comedy roles as well. So you love First Date. What other episodes do you love?
Right. Well, New York I Love You is probably I think we'll probably both agree the best episode of the season by far. It might be one of the best. No?
I'm giving him a look that you guys can't see right now. I don't know about by far. I do think it's the best episode.
But it's maybe on par with the dating one.
I would argue First Date, and then I'll make my case for Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving,
once,
okay.
Once we talk about,
about
other elements.
Yeah, so, New York I Love You, but before that, I just have to really, really give it up for Bobby Cannavale, who I think people remember from, and people probably remember from a lot of things, but I was first introduced to him on a major level in Boardwalk Empire. He played like one of the villains, I think, in season 3. He was pretty amazing in that. And he plays Anthony Bourdain. He plays a rock star chef who's like on the Food Network or whatever it's called, Food TV is on the show.
Yeah.
And he's insane. He like plays it like he's the most cocky, coked up, but super happy and super friendly, and like everybody's his best friend.
It's perfect casting.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's like totally amazing. And then I think he appears in the first show, the first episode, which is The Dinner Party. He might have premiered a little bit later, but The Dinner Party is when he's having a date a dinner party at his house, and he's like, you know, got this swanky, amazing house in Manhattan, and John Legend's there. And John Legend plays a song at his party. And
yeah,
I mean, he's just phenomenal. He nails that part, so I have to give it up for him. I don't know if his, like, episode, if he's in the best episode or not, But
he's a great character.
Yeah, yeah. And so New York, I Love You is brilliant because it's about New York and it doesn't really feature Aziz or Dev or Arnold. They're barely in it. They start at the beginning. They're going to think about going to see this movie, this fake movie called Death Castle. And, you know, they're like, it's I think a Nicolas Cage is supposed to be in it, and it's this thing that everybody wants to go see, and there's a spoiler in it, and people are like, don't tell me the twist, don't tell me the twist. And then it cuts, and then sort of like goes into this whole other thing where it's intersecting between the lives of New Yorkers who don't ever appear on the show again. Just have their, it's like three different vignettes. One is with a doorman. Another one is with a deaf girl and her husband. They're like in a Bed Bath & Beyond or something.
Fish is Eddie.
Oh, are they? Okay. Okay, you're right. And then.
I know my New York home store.
Okay, you do. And then there's a taxi driver, a Rwandan immigrant taxi driver, and his friends. I think what I love about, I mean, it's a funny fucking episode
great.
As well, but there's such a, and I think that runs one of the themes, is it's just like a, especially that one, of this empathy for people. All these people are essentially marginalized, mm-hmm. right? You have Eddie, who's like this Latino guy who's he's a doorman, right? Mm-hmm. So he's opening the doors for rich white people, and he has to do favors for people, and they're all, so this old lady goes, you know, don't eat mango at your desk, and it's not him, it's somebody else.
Ugh.
So he's like sort of juggling everybody in his building and all the problems,
yeah.
and he's just the doorman, but he's, you know, treated like garbage or treated well, and so he's marginalized. And then you've got the Rwandan immigrant who's the cab driver, and obviously cab drivers aren't paid or treated really well, and he's living with friends in a small apartment. There's like four of them, and they're living like essentially like it's a dorm.
Yeah,
like, there's a bunk bed
in the kitchen.
Yeah, and everything's right there. They're like obviously making no money, and the show follows them for a little bit. And then there's the deaf girl who's struggling with her sex life, and she's basically signing the, you know, there's no really any dialogue, or there's no spoken dialogue in that video.
And there's no sound, right?
Totally. And so they're just doing sign language with subtitles, which is just really, really fucking brilliant. Really smart, no sound. And so just the way that there's empathy for every single character, that everyone's marginalized in some respect, and the way that the show respectfully, you know, empathizes with them and their plight, but without like making you pity them or anything. You know, they're like, especially the Rwandan guy and his friends, like, you know, they go out, they have that party, they're a little bit fucked over, but they go out, they're trying to go clubbing, and you know, they sort of have this shitty night, they're like fucked over by people, but then they go to
Lucky's
Burgers, and you know, they meet these girls and they essentially have like a little party in Lucky's, like this impromptu party because one of their friends works there. And so it's like kind of really joyful and really awesome, terrific episode. I hope we haven't like totally spoiled it for someone who hasn't seen it. It's just really amazing, and then it ties in at the end with going to see Death Castle.
It's so perfect. I think too, not only are these types of people normally marginalized, obviously in the real world, but also in TV, where you have a brief conversation with the cab driver, if he gets a line at all, mm-hmm. or the woman behind the counter at the bodega, or the doorman, but instead they get their own scenes here, and they're just magical. And it is, I love the title, of course, it is New York, I Love You, because it feels like a very New York story that is also something that I hope that people can really enjoy beyond New York, but it's also, I love that it's so much better than the movie that it shares a title with. So much better. That episode is fantastic.
I think that's a really good observation that, like, you see these people all the time on television, but they're on the fringes, just like they're on the fringes in real life. And, you know, he takes these characters and gives them the lead, essentially.
Yeah.
And it's like, I kind of want to watch that show all the time. I want to see, like, New York, I Love You, the show that, like, does vignettes. Or, I mean, it would be obviously better if you would just give one person a lead. But the idea of, like, these vignettes of these sort of people on the fringes that you don't see on TV, who get their own shows. And they have their own storylines in this little thing. You know, like, maybe you could even do a show where, like, you pick like three or four or, you know, maybe six,
yeah,
and you weave those stories, their narratives across a whole season.
I would 100% watch that.
That would be cool, right?
Before we move on to, I think, discussing how important place is in the show, both the first couple of episodes in Italy, which had me just absolutely wanting to go to Italy and eat everything, not just in Italy, but I had to be like eating dinner while watching or like grabbing a pint of ice cream from the fridge.
Yeah, there's certainly, yeah, when the food is that one place, I'm like, yeah, I'm obviously not smelling it, I'm not eating it, but I'm like, oh my God, I need to go to that place.
Yeah.
It just like looks amazing.
Yeah, the food.
It's a total foodie show.
Oh,
for sure.
Completely.
Like, he's obviously a foodie in real life.
Yeah.
Because all he does in Italy is just eat, 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 and like you see him like going, I mean, almost every episode in Italy is him going to like multiple restaurants in one episode, right?
Yeah, which is, you know, that's life goals. But also New York, I think, is so lovingly shot, and the locations are all really well chosen. Whoever is, whether it's coming from the location scout or it's knowledge from Ansari and
Yang, I think it must
Yang,
be.
Like,
it just seems like there's a lot of personal experience of like going, like Lucky's. It's like a great
yeah.
burger joint, but kind of random, right?
It's totally
like
random.
You have to know Lucky's to like, and just all the spots, right?
Yeah.
There are all those kinds of like, you kind of had to be there.
Yeah,
kinda been there once.
The amount of detail and the fact that place is so important makes the show feel really vibrant and
really authentic.
Yeah, like as somebody who lives in New York, there I've had far fewer moments with the show where I'm like, well, that geography is wrong. And also with the New York, I loved the Blizzard episode where like it's just totally quiet, which is, and they're walking down the middle of the street. I'm like, that is New York in a blizzard, and I love New York in a blizzard.
It reminds me of, you know, the Dylan shot where they're going down in the snow
yeah.
on the street, right, on the album. I'm blanking on the album, and I should know it, but someone's going to yell at me, and they're going to put it in the comments section. but yeah, that feeling, and it's just lived in, and it's experienced, it's
yeah.
authentic, and I definitely agree with you that you've seen, like, I'm sure any listeners, anyone's seen a movie or a TV where it's like, I mean, I guess if you're, the other thing is if you're not a New Yorker, maybe it doesn't
yeah.
as much, although that authenticity probably bleeds through in some way.
I hope
but
so.
But there's definitely, like, I think anybody can recognize that when they're watching something and it's supposed to be New York or supposed to be whatever, and it just feels phony. It
like Cleveland?
Feel, yeah. It just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And it's not even that you're in a different location. It's just something about, you could, you know, even the way you're saying, like, the geography. Like, you could be shooting in New York, but you might be shooting in a place that's, like, and the way you've shot it, it just doesn't feel real.
Yeah, but this, I thought they really captured what makes each place they went to really special. And every time I was like, if I didn't know where it was, I was looking up where it was because I want to go. And not just because it's cool or whatever, because Master of None was there. I was like, the food looks great. The decor is awesome. Like, no,
That's what they should do. Someone should do that if they haven't already, like doing like a visual online tour of like here's where they went and like here's where that you can find it and like this whole like little map of like the major locations and
somebody has done it, but I can't remember which website. We can do a shout out.
Sounds like something Vulture would do.
Yeah, Vulture or maybe Thrillist. But yeah, I also can kind of see it as the like as this decade's version of the Sex and the City tour.
Yes.
But, like, probably on foot, not on a big bus.
Right.
Or a bike. They'll figure out, or, like, pedicabs. They'll figure out the, like, hipster way to approach that. But, yeah. So I would argue very strongly for Thanksgiving, which I thought was beautifully executed, both in terms of... So Thanksgiving is, unsurprisingly, the Thanksgiving episode that tracks the friendship between Dev and Denise, who's played by Lena Waithe, who also co-wrote the episode. And it begins...
She's one of his best friends, too.
Yes, yeah, and I think she actually helped shape the part because she wasn't... I think the role wasn't initially for a black woman and wasn't initially written to be a lesbian, but they based it more on her.
Right.
And so both of those aspects of her identity really play strongly into
Thanksgiving.
She's leading that episode. And a giant shout out to the sneeze apparently in the background. A giant shout out to Angela Bassett, who plays Denise's mother.
Yes.
And also, I cannot recall the name of Denise's aunt, and then her grandmother, who felt just very, I know a woman who is Denise's grandmother, curses and is really funny and sweet and is not to be messed with. But Thanksgiving, I think, is beautifully done, how it tracks where we are in our lives and in particular focuses on the experience of a Black woman coming out to her family. And was really funny on top of being incredibly touching. I will laugh about, is it Nipples and Toes 23? both the Instagram handle of Denise's short-term girlfriend that she brings home one year, as well as Dev's bringing it up at the table.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The show is really diverse. She has a lot of different perspectives, puts those perspectives in the lead, is very, for lack of a better term, woke.
Yes.
super diverse and just giving marginalized voices perspectives and their point of views, which is just, without just giving them, hey, let's give these marginalized voices. It's it's funny, it's lived in, it's humorous, it's poignant.
Yes.
I think that episode's a good reflection of the show in general.
Absolutely. It feels also, it doesn't ever feel forced. It feels very authentic to the show's voice and what it's doing.
Yeah, and to that end, to the people who created it, right?
Absolutely.
It feels, that's their experience, that's their life, and that's what they're communicating and expressing in that show, and that's why the show, to me, is so great, because it just feels like, oh, this is his personality, these are the friends he hangs out, this is what his life is like. He's translating that on the screen, and it feels very personal in that way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it just seem so unique. And he's just gotten better. I wasn't really convinced of his acting in the first season. I just was like, And he's just gotten a lot better.
Agree.
He's gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
And we should probably mention, because we haven't, and we talked around, we talked about Francesca. Right, and she's the main, I guess the third character or the second character if you want to think about it.
Yeah, and I do think it's interesting that we haven't actually mentioned Francesca up until this point.
Well, I think my main reason for it is she's maybe my favorite or my least favorite part of the show.
Yeah, and we'll give you the fair warning for spoilers here. I feel like we haven't.
Should we go back and give context on who she is?
Yeah. So peace out if you haven't watched at least most of the show. We'll say all of it. Francesca is the woman who works at the shop where Dev is making pasta.
In Italy.
Modena, yeah.
Yeah, Modena.
She is the granddaughter of the shop owner and a restaurant owner. And she and Dev have great chemistry while in Italy. And then she visits him multiple times back in New York.
But they start off as this great friendship in the beginning. And she's sort of he's in Italy and he doesn't know anybody. And, he's gone there to get away. At the same time, it ends up being really lonely, and so she really, in a way, takes him under her wing, or at least hey, I know you're here by yourself and you're probably lonely or don't know people, and hang out with me and my boyfriend and my friends, and she becomes sort of his extended family in Italy, and so she's super sweet, she's super nice, they really kick, hit it off, and I think for him too, I think you know where we're heading. There's a sort of, I wouldn't say there's a relationship with them, but there's something clearly going on. They have, by the end of the season, spoiler, they're essentially revealing that they're in love with one another.
That episode, the penultimate one, which is called Amarsi Un Po, it's about twice as long as the average episode. I think it was almost an hour, and really details, I think, Dev at his most unsure and perhaps heartbroken as he's in love with this woman who is engaged to someone else. And I felt like I was made physically uncomfortable in a good way by like remembering being that like unsure about what's going to happen with this person that I'm in love with.
And, right, and the complications there. And everyone's been there in some sort of way.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think we've talked about it the least of everything else because it just, to me, becomes the least interesting part of the rest of them are really funny and really vibrant, and the love story thing isn't as strong and it's not played out as strong. She's good. Yeah. I like her. I don't think she's necessarily amazing.
Yeah. She is super charming.
She is.
And like absolutely the Italian girl that you'd have a crush on.
Yeah, totally. But something about maybe it boils down to the show is much more in its element when it's being humorous and observant, right, of New York and observant of all the cultures and other walks of life. And this one becomes that's a little bit external. This one sort of becomes internal. It just becomes about Dev and her for the most part, and this sort of will they or won't they kind of relationship thing that we've kind of seen in every sitcom. I mean, go back to Cheers. You know what I mean? Like in a lame but like, you know, first thing that popped into my head.
Yeah, no, totally accurate.
And so the show starts to, like, its pace starts to slow down. It kind of dips, and then it kind of goes into a little bit of a plateau as we see them, you know, sort of inch forward in their relationship about their affection and their, you know, they're friends, but then, and they're very affectionate with one another, but that affection keeps growing and growing and growing in a real natural kind of way.
Absolutely.
But, I guess it's funny because it starts off the show and it becomes the thread through the entire show. And obviously by the end, it is the show.
Yeah.
But it's, to me, maybe the least interesting part.
Yeah. I think she's also, by nature, her absence is one of the most important aspects of her, whether she's in Italy or she's not hanging out with Dev on a particular night because she's out with her boyfriend or fiance. And that slights her a bit, but I didn't care as much. Like, even though I was like racked by nostalgic pains around their relationship, it was also something where I agree. I would rather have had more scenes with him and Arnold than more scenes with him and Francesca. Or more scenes with him and his father in particular.
Is it coming back for a third season?
So, in a while, I think. So, in an interview with Vulture, he said, "I've got to become a different guy before I write a third season, is my personal thought. I've got to get married or have a kid or something. I don't have anything else to say about being a young guy, being single in New York, eating food all around all the time."
Wow. That's pretty great because, again, it's like his life that he's expressed.
Absolutely.
And he said it. He said his piece. So, to me, that's the most refreshing thing you can possibly do is genuinely say, "I'm not doing any more of this because I need more of my life to explain, to new things to express." Most television is like, "Oh, we've been season 3. Let's keep going. Season 4." And then they just, you know, I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. It sort of drives me mental that, like, just people just keep going because they can.
Yeah.
And it does feel like a real natural way to end right now. And the fact that he's like, he's essentially saying, like, "Look, the quality wouldn't be as good if I just keep going just for the point of going. I need something to say." And God, if everybody in television did that rather than, you know, the quality, we just see like crazy quality, right? Because it's not, you don't locked into, "Hey, you're going to 7 seasons of this or whatever." And you know, it's like, I find that bold and I find that refreshing and I wish more people would do it. And as I said before, this is not a limited series, but I love the idea of a limited series. You say something and you say it in a short period of time and then you're done. You don't have to, the extended parts is just repeating yourself over and over and over again.
Yeah, Yeah, and I think that that is one of the benefits of it being on Netflix, where there is less pressure to fill a half hour on an actual schedule versus slotting in, this is coming out this week, Kimmy Schmidt is coming out next week. And there are certainly linear networks that do allow that sort of freedom, whether it's an FX, in particular with Louie, or allowing Noah Hawley and Fargo to take a little bit more time between seasons, or HBO with Curb. So that, I think, is a really wonderful thing about the evolution of TV, is that certain companies are better about allowing for that creative freedom and acknowledging that that might actually create a better show.
You know, you bring up Louie, and sort of rewinds me right back to the beginning, because I think if I was explaining Master of None to someone in season one, having watched a few episodes, I'd probably say, "Oh, it's like kind of like Louie, but through with Aziz Ansari." And I think maybe that might be fair to say, but it's totally evolved past that. It's become its own show, its own personality, its Aziz. You know, Louie obviously made that sort of template of the idea that you can have show someone's life and sort of like, it doesn't have to be like narratively linear. You can jump around and you can say lots of different things, and you sort of pop in and out of their lives. That obviously, like Master of None has that element, but it's really become its own thing. It's personalized, and I think he's done a tremendous job with it, just because, again, first season, I think it was trying to find its legs. It wasn't quite there, hadn't quite found its voice. I mean, it found its voice, but not in this such self-assured, confident way that season two is. Season two, and just the way it's shot, everything that we've said, it's just, I mean, I was sort of complaining, well, sort of on a tangent, because we're hopefully going to talk about I Love Dick on Amazon.
Yes.
Which I adore, I think it's amazing. But it wasn't really getting as much attention the week or two that it first started. And then I realized it was because Master of None had come out, and that sort of like hoovered up all the critical attention in it, because everyone was just really, really into it. And I think I Love Dick got a little bit missed. But since these things have a little bit more long tail these days, you know, even though, you know, who knows, maybe Twin Peaks has stolen its moment too.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a great show that I think is, I mean, it's a testament to Master of None that it was so buzzed about that it sort of like wiped out everything down, you know? It's like everything like sucked up the attention of everything.
Yeah, but now that hopefully people are either finished with Master of None or about finished, they can move on to other great comedies like
Yeah, we highly recommend it. And I mean, even if they don't do Master of None, I would love to see those guys try and do something else.
Absolutely.
The writing is so sharp, the observations, the human observations are just awesome, and you know, maybe they take it from someone else's point of view, like Alan or somebody else.
Yeah. Well, we just gave them their I Love, or their New York I Love You idea.
Yes.
To turn into a whole show.
Totally.
So.
I think that's a good idea.
Send them the pitch.
I think the viewer, the listener, not the viewer, should watch that episode and then think about that idea and see what they think, and like write in or something, let us know, because I think that's a good idea.
Absolutely.
It could be really cool.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear it too from people who don't live in New York.
Yeah.
Because we're super psyched about it, but my parents in Ohio very psyched? Actually, they probably would be.
That's the thing about a great show though, right? Like,
yeah.
It translates.
Absolutely.
You know, I love Seinfeld as a kid. I'd never been to New York.
Yeah.
Right? And
Seinfeld, and it's not New York.
No.
Well, it is New York.
It is and it isn't. It's the fake New York that I'm talking about. But it is very New York-y too, now that I've been here forever. I've connected with it on another level. I mean, somewhat, because you're right, it's not authentic New York. It is very studio-based New York.
But there's, Jerry Seinfeld is a New Yorker.
Sure. But everyone, I think a lot of people are, like, everyone really, if something's really good, essentially, it's universal and it translates everywhere, right?
Absolutely.
Time and place might be a little bit, that extra little bit of, you know, greatness for someone else who's really part of it. But, you know, I think if it's universal, it's universal. Yeah.
So our advice is absolutely watch Master of None, and when you finish, go and watch I Love Dick and await a future episode from us talking about it.
Yeah, definitely. I really want to talk about that. I love that show. And just so people know, it's by the maker of Transparent, Jill Soloway, and everyone seemed to adore Transparent, so.
I like this better than Transparent.
So do I. Although, I think Transparent is amazing.
Yes. Yeah, not just light Transparent, but this is a very different thing that is very special. So cool, thank you cool. for joining me yeah, today.
Thanks for having me again. And well, let's do this again.
Yes.
You can find us on SoundCloud, you can find us on iTunes, and you can also find the podcast posted on our home, theplaylist.net. On iTunes, please subscribe and consider leaving a comment or rate our pod. All feedback is appreciated. You can find me at the creatively titled @KimberMyers, M-Y-E-R-S, on Twitter, and we'll see you next time.